ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, Corbin Middlemass here. What's going on with the cricket? Well, that's what the ABC Cricket Podcast is for, with me and my sparring partner, Ed Cowan. Who's been selected?
He got another 100 during the week.
Who's been rejected?
So obviously, if he's not fit enough.
And who has the best grade cricket salad roll?
What was the key? The quality of the cheese or the bun?
Bun was always fresh, or the salad inside nice and soft.
Search for the ABC Cricket Podcast on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Background Briefing team are working hard on fresh episodes. In the meantime, we've collaborated with ABC Long Reads to bring you some of the best pieces of journalism read by the people who've written them.
Armed with a burner phone and a fake name, I set out to learn how Instagram's algorithm really works. I'm Priyanka Srinivasan, and this is a piece I wrote for the ABC's Long Read called How Social Media Algorithms Decide Who You Are. At some point, let's say a Wednesday night around 8:40 p.m., too late to work but far too early to sleep, I find myself watching someone spread toothpaste and butter on a cracked phone screen. Scroll. A pigeon with a hole in its neck pecks at a plastic water bowl. Scroll. A woman, her face and hands coated in a shiny paste the color of Vegemite, runs the back of a butter knife along her left cheek, revealing a patch of clear, poreless-looking skin underneath. There's something strangely intimate about sharing the content of your social media feed with others. It feels like exposing a secret part of yourself, your idle curiosities, guilty pleasures, the things you like to click on when no one else is watching. Our feeds can often feel like private mirrors, reflecting a version of ourselves that others just rarely get to see. On this particular occasion, though, it wasn't exactly my reflection I was staring at. These clips belonged to a sock puppet account I had created on Instagram using a factory reset burner phone. It was part of a month and a half long experiment I was running to figure out how social media apps curate the unique digital worlds we occupy. The motivation to run the experiment came to me on a separate evening while I was mindlessly scrolling through my genuine Instagram feed. I was struck by this feeling that the videos are a poor and sometimes shameful representation of who I really am. As a journalist, with what I hope are diverse interests in world politics, arts, and culture, my feed ripples with banal videos of celebrities, makeup tutorials, and puppy hijinks. Put another way, if my Instagram feed were a diet, it would be one riddled with ultra-processed junk food, accompanied by almost no vegetables or greens. All pleasure, zero nutrition. I know I'm not alone with my anxieties. I want to understand, why do social media apps show us certain content over others? Are they a true reflection of the unique interests and values that define us? Or are the algorithms driving our social media feed somehow pernicious, drip-feeding us an endless slurry of addictive brain rot? Can we wrestle back control? My social media experiment attempted to answer these questions. By tracking how my fake feed responded to deliberate behavior on and off the platform, I wondered if I could unravel how apps like TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube decide what to show us, and how they ensnare us in a loop of provocative or misinformed content. Maybe I could even coax my account into reflecting a more nourishing version of myself. So I built a sterile digital environment, untethered from my real life. I wiped the contents of an old phone clean, randomly generated an alias called Tank Promotion, and created a matching email account. After buying a new SIM card to verify the device, I downloaded Instagram, my platform of choice to run the experiment since I was most familiar with its interface. other apps like Google, YouTube, and others I downloaded would serve as tools to more subtly manipulate the signals Instagram uses to curate its feed. Stage one of the experiment could begin. I started scrolling. The content seemed random, unpredictable. With no existing access of information, my page was a menagerie of interests. Videos of gooey sauces being mixed into steaming pasta, of men holding fish, of kittens, of idyllic landscapes. Instagram operates with a basic motive: to ensure you stay on its app as long as possible. Finding out what holds our attention also keeps social media companies profitable. Most users enter their accounts with existing friends and networks, allowing the platform to guess their likes with decent accuracy. But faced with a blank profile like mine, Instagram acts like a parent, feeding a fussy child, serving up a plethora of tastes until it strikes the one that's gobbled up with glee. A former Meta intern named Mohammed Haroon told me, when you start with a vanilla profile, you have this diverse content pool, and the algorithm is trying to gauge what this user is interested in. Haroon is now a doctoral student in computer science from UC Davis, researching how content is recommended to you online. He says, they have a bunch of different feedback mechanisms, like if you watch a reel a second longer than you watch something else. At this early stage of the experiment, I was determined to limit my feedback. I made sure not to linger on any one piece of media. I watched each video in its entirety and quickly scrolled to the next. I kept my movements steady and rhythmic. Despite my attempts, Instagram kept unlocking parts of me I tried to keep hidden. A steady mix of AFL content and hyper-local news stories suggested the app knew I lived in Melbourne. I checked my phone's location settings, and sure enough, Instagram had recently accessed this information. Other additions to my feed were harder to explain. One video featured a woman in a sari frying up South Indian dumplings called kuri paniyaram, an obscure dish my mum would make when I was growing up. On another occasion, photos of kittens suddenly overtook my page, some of them eerily similar to my friend's cat. He'd just come over for dinner days earlier. Were these just coincidences, or did this phone actually know who my family and friends were? Professor Daniel Angus from Queensland University of Technology introduced me to this one possibility that gives me chills. With access to our location data, social media platforms suggest profiles and content to us based on not just where we are, but who we are with. He says, it's going to be using that geolocation to profile you and your tastes and likes and wants. It's not individual targeting, it's associative logics now. Your tastes, behaviors, and connections mapped as coordinates within a larger field of data relations. Associative logic works like this. Social media systems see your phone as one node in a vast network of devices. When you spend time in the same place with certain other people, say at work, at home, or out with friends, these connections are reinforced. The system begins associating your account with theirs. This information shapes the content you see online. Angus advises, think less of what you were doing individually on the device and more about what everybody else around you is doing on theirs. This model may explain the spooky experiences many of us have on social media. Meeting a stranger at a party and finding their profile appears on your suggested friends list. Or seeing an ad for a product your partner recently purchased. Or, in my case, finding content on Tank Promotion's Instagram account that relates to parts of my personal life. Angus says, you need to remove the idea of you being one single isolated point in a space. You are the product of not just you, but every other phone and device in your environment. I will never know for sure why certain videos turned up in my feed, but the experiment was already making clear that the media we see online is tied to the people and places we see off it. Faced with this reality, Australia's social media ban offers the comfort of action, shielding users under the age of 16 from the omnipresence of targeted content. But as Angus warns, it may also distract us from answering deeper issues, like, will such a ban address how social media companies harvest data, including that of their youngest users? Will the online behavior of adults or older siblings still shape what children see on their devices? And are these models inherently harmful to young people if they simply mirror a world that's already around them? In social media's early days, some 20 years ago, only the posts from accounts you followed appeared chronologically in the order they were shared. You could quickly reach the end of your feed, a place where there was nothing more to see. The result was a more user-controlled, though restrictive, experience. As social media companies looked to include more advertising, they began curating our feeds without us actively looking for content. They adopted recommender systems, now called the algorithm, that act like invisible strings pulling us towards certain content. The so-called collaborative model, pioneered by Netflix, was one of the earliest recommender systems. If user 1 liked movies A, B, and C, and user 2 liked movies A, B, C, and D, the algorithm would suggest movie D to user 1. As the models became more sophisticated, social media companies designed systems that learned directly from an individual's behavior. Every deliberate action on a post acted like a weighted vote for content you wanted to see more of. Most of us understand that if you consistently like, comment, or share videos of puppies, for example, the algorithm will rank puppy videos higher and they will show up more regularly in your feed. But we're not always reliable reporters of our own preferences. To appeal to our deepest desires, social media companies started tracking how long you gaze at a video, when you close the app, and how quickly you scroll through your page. This all feeds the ranking system, helping predict what will keep you scrolling. Haroon says TikTok is particularly advanced in interpreting these so-called implicit signals. No surprise then that this platform is also particularly addictive. Modern platforms use AI and deep learning methods where systems are trained on masses of data and programmed to optimize our feeds for high engagement. Haroon calls these systems a sort of black box where it's hard to understand exactly why this model spits out something at you. He says even experts on the inside are finding it increasingly hard to understand what's happening. And that's where we're left today. A recommendation system that's almost entirely data and engagement driven, without reliable methods to automatically block harmful content. Many of us now feel stuck on a conveyor belt of content intricately designed to appeal to our specific interests, and no one can fully explain how it happens. My experiment was a chance to pull back the curtain. To examine the power of these systems, I wanted to see if I could convince my new Instagram account that I was someone else. Say a mother with a newborn baby. I tested a popular conspiracy that your phone's microphone listens in. I opened my laptop, typed in new mother into YouTube's search engine, and it autoplayed a variety of associated videos. I took advantage of YouTube's own recommendation system by allowing it to cycle through suggested videos while I was at work. I put my burner phone right up against my laptop speaker and left. Once I returned home, I eagerly checked my Instagram feed. No new baby-related content appeared. On its websites, Meta says it does not listen to our conversations through the microphone. Perhaps it doesn't need to. Perhaps our behavior on the devices speaks loudly enough. Time to ramp up my signals. I downloaded a suite of pregnancy and baby tracking apps. I added fake data. I pretended to track the rituals and schedules of my fake baby, who I christened Tanky. A few days later, the first video waiting for me in my Instagram timeline was a cartoon of a woman in labor. Over the next week, I noticed more videos and thumbnails of infants and mums. By no means was my account flooded with baby content, so I introduced new variables to see if I could magnify the results. I googled best baby carriers. I joined new mothers groups on Facebook. I followed subreddits called New Mum Stuff and Pregnancy_Care. My account continued to shift, but in more unexpected ways. I began to get semi-pornographic content, busty women rolling around their beds, animations of maids gyrating suggestively back and forth alongside a green hot dog-like character. At times, my suggested friends' profile pictures consisted of several women with their heads cropped out, their curvaceous bodies pouring out of lingerie. Even the motherhood content seemed somehow salacious. A man squeezing a woman's breast to fill his mug with milk. I suspect two reasons. I first noticed this change while I was using the free Wi-Fi in a London cafe. Was there something about my location or others in the cafe that prompted the algorithm to serve me adult content? Alternatively, a simpler reason. Sex sells. Porn is ubiquitous online. It's estimated that 1 in 3 young Australians encounters pornography unintentionally before they turn 13, and often through social media. I was about 3 weeks into my experiment, and I hadn't clicked, liked, or interacted with any content. Perhaps in an act of desperation, the platform was sending me the posts that kept many of its users engaged. Mohammed Haroon finds this theory plausible. He says, when you optimize for engagement, you start seeing content that could be misinformation, controversial, or shocking, that keeps you engaged because of morbid curiosity. After a few more days of watching my feed slide into filth, alongside some motherhood and other content, I decided to give Instagram a more obvious push. I selected a few thumbnails on my explore page that looked vaguely child-oriented. Photos of toilet rolls crafted into animals, a cake shaped like the number 6, and an infant's walker. Within seconds, the account bloomed with baby gear and motherhood content. My Reels feed became a constant stream of chubby infants. In under 8 minutes, Instagram had reimagined me as a parent. The behavior that may have led me to being classified as a new mother was relatively benign, and I imagine useful for someone who really had a new baby. But soon, that same profiling logic would push me towards something far more toxic. A few weeks later, my phone began insisting I follow an all-meat diet and massage my husband every night. As a single woman and a lifelong vegetarian, this was an odd development. I wanted to push my feed away from the motherhood content that now dominated into corners of Instagram linked to young men. I searched for the popular podcaster Joe Rogan. On YouTube, I subscribed to Rogan's channel and commented on his videos. I did the same to other accounts in YouTube's recommended list, namely Fox News and Sky News Australia. My Instagram feed didn't budge. Not yet, anyway. The next day, I watched Rogan's videos directly on Instagram. I returned to my Reels feed. What I found there shocked me. In 3 swipes, I landed on a video from Top G Inspired. It featured controversial internet personality Andrew Tate talking to a blonde woman. In the video, Tate applauds men as being, quote, good at suffering. He calls women spiteful sufferers. I had not searched for Tate, a man who's been accused of rape and inspiring a generation of misogynists. I wasn't following his accounts, or any for that matter. Yet here he was. Tate wasn't the only bigoted commentator I met that day. Sean Strickland, a mixed martial artist, appeared shortly after, wearing a t-shirt that said, "Woman in every kitchen, gun in every hand." He was talking to a man off-screen who called himself an ally of the gay community. Strickland responded, saying, "There are two genders," and calling the man weak and an infection. Over the next week, my feed entered a universe of anti-vaccine screeds, odes to all-meat diets, information on how to increase testosterone, and why nicotine is good for you, alongside more clips of Tate railing against feminism. These videos seem to carry a distinct ideological tilt, and I'm stunned that a handful of actions, both on and off the platform, were enough to trigger a wave of hyper-masculine, conspiratorial content. Haroon and his colleagues found that recommendation engines can funnel users towards progressively more extreme and polarizing content. They ran an experiment with 100,000 sock puppet accounts on YouTube, each with an assigned political ideology. More than 36% of these accounts received extremist video recommendations. For right-leaning accounts, that number was closer to 40%. Haroon says these more extremist channels, which are usually white nationalist, anti-woke, anti-feminism, appear more often for people who are not necessarily watching these channels explicitly, but they are engaging with right-leaning content. He also says this study showed some degree of radicalization was happening because of the recommendation systems used by social media companies. He says his experiment showed that personalization is causing you to be in an ideological filter bubble. The question is, how do you escape? On a grey Melbourne afternoon, I clicked on a Zoom meeting for Internet and Technology Addicts Anonymous. A gallery of boxes filled my screen, some blank with just their first names, others with faces from around the world. Internet and Technology Addicts Anonymous is a support group for people struggling with internet addiction. For many of its members, social media has become a vice, trapping them in an addictive bubble that they can't escape alone. This group follows a 12-step recovery model based on mutual support and spiritual guidance. Several spoke about their compulsion to scroll. Others about how online addiction has had serious consequences on their work and personal lives. Many expressed gratitude for being part of the group and their journey to recovery. A young man from Melbourne described to me how his entire nights were lost surfing YouTube and other platforms, falling deeper down the rabbit hole of recommended content. Even while signed out or on different devices, he felt pulled back in. Peer support through this group helped him. He now uses special programs on his phone that block social media platforms and the other sites he finds particularly addictive. My experiment showed we can take deliberate steps to develop a healthier relationship with social media. We can spend time with people and places that reflect the content we want to see, engage with posts that uplift us, and actively block those that don't. Algorithms reward engagement, so the more consciously we participate, the more consciously our feed responds. I tried following accounts on my experimental Instagram account that better reflected my interests, the bands I liked, the hobbies that excited me, the news sites I trusted. But often, I found myself drifting back to the extreme and conspiracy-laden videos that now littered my feed. And I was hesitant to give up the access. Yes, escaping these worlds curated by engagement-hungry algorithms takes effort. But after this experiment, I feel like I have a few more tools available to outsmart them. Maybe I'll do that later. For now, I continue to scroll.